Hello, and welcome to Project Hearthstone Become Legendary. I'm your host, Franco the Speedy Marufo, and this is Episode 3, the Green Sheep Interview. On this week's show, BJ, Dave, and myself get together with one of the world's top Hearthstone players, Green Sheep, in our futile attempt to make the podcast somewhat relevant. We try to interview Green Sheep about his experiences at the World Championships and why he's just so damn good at Hearthstone, but ended up simply bombarding him with random banter, so enjoy that. Also this week, I went for a funky sound effect that made everybody sound like they're in a cathedral, because who doesn't like echoes? This was completely intentional, of course, and not some fucked up recording. We may or may not be using this sound effect in the future. Finally, we've had some feedback about the explicit language used on the show, so it's worth mentioning now that some of the language used and conversations had are probably not for children, unless said children are particularly cool. As we all know, swearing is fun, expressive, cool, and definitely in, but it's also only for adults and really cool kids. So don't listen to this if you're neither of those. So, enjoy.
You will tell us what we want to know.
Welcome back for another episode of Project Hearthstone Become Legendary. My name is BJ the Bit Brave, and I am joined by Franco the Speedy Marufo. Hello, sir.
All right.
Now, we're our usual other culprit and partner in crime has gone AWOL, Mr. Dave Simcock.
He's not gone AWOL. He's forgot how to use a laptop. We told him it's like a book that sort of lies down and you kind of open it in a kind of weird angle, and he's not getting it. So we're letting him use his phone tonight if he can work out how to use that.
I love how we spent the first two episodes just taking the piss out of how sort of technologically retarded Dave actually is, and come what, only episode 3, he can't even log on to Skype to record.
Oh, so. Dude, he's got a new logon, so obviously everything's... It's all changed in Dave Simcock's household. As soon as he's got a new logon, he just confuses him into it. too many things to change.
Anyway, before Dave's idioticness steals the show, we're also joined today with our first special guest, all the way from sunny Blackpool, a man who made it to the BlizzCon finals, known to the his name is James, but known to the Hearthstone community as Green Sheep. Hello, sir.
Hello.
Welcome to the show, mate. Really, really, really glad that you could come on, and actually really happy that you're the first guest that we've had on this new podcast, being that it's a UK podcast and you are, you know, one of the UK's best players. So I'm really good to have you.
Yeah, thanks for having me as well.
You might be able to tell, Green Sheep, because I know we've been back and forth on email, but we haven't talked, but now we have. You might be able to tell I've also got a bit of a northern accent like you.
Yeah, I can tell, yeah.
Well, I'm actually from Huddersfield in West Yorkshire, but you're from Blackpool. And for a lot of our listeners, you know, they're from America and sort of all over the shop, really. And I remember being a kid, like, weekend trips to Blackpool. What can we tell the world who don't really know much about our tiny little island country about Blackpool?
About Blackpool?
Donkeys, donkeys is the first thing to get to my mind.
Yeah, donkeys.
That's just a lady.
And, like, carriages. I guess, the best thing in Blackpool is probably the Pleasure Beach. It's just, like, the giant amusement park there. It's pretty fun.
It's always best when it's raining.
That's when it's at its best. When it's railing, yeah, and there's the gale force winds coming in off the beach. You know, that's when you really, really fear for your life up in those like roller coasters.
Yeah, you just get blown everywhere. It's just crazy out there.
It's real funny, isn't it? Because it's like the tacky sort of for like American listeners and stuff. Like Blackpool is known as like one of the main like a little holiday resort in the north of England.
It's shit Vegas. They've literally done shit Vegas. They've even done like a replica of the Eiffel Tower, like Vegas, except a shit replica of the Eiffel Tower. It's shit Vegas.
It's constantly raining in the middle of the summer holidays. Donkeys everywhere. But they have got a good Pleasure Beach, haven't they? They have actually got some pretty decent rides. They're very expensive last time I was there.
Yeah, it's quite expensive, but like I think it's like the biggest amusement park in the UK.
Yeah, that's it.
So yeah. It's okay, I guess. It's okay.
And so do you live near the centre then? Is that somewhere you can just go and hang out on weekends around the Pleasure Beach and all that, or?
I live like 5 minutes away from like the centre, 5-10 minutes away. But pretty near. I can go in like if I want, like every day.
Mm. That's pretty cool. And are you based there or are you sort of studying in Blackpool?
I'm studying on like the outskirts, like in like a small like town that's like 5 minutes away.
Yeah. Cool. Cool. Well, that's it for our geography lesson. Oh, is Dave's going to join us, I think, at some point when he works out how to...
Use a phone.
How to use Skype, how to just use technology in general. But I just heard him beep, so I think he's gonna be on here any minute now. For those who sort of aren't familiar with you, Green Sheep, just tell us a little bit about sort of how you got into Hearthstone and some of your achievements so far in it.
Well, at first, I was like playing League of Legends, which is another popular game, as you might know.
Yeah.
And I was playing that with all my friends, and then they all started playing Hearthstone, like, during queue times, because League of Legends has, like, a giant, like, queue time to, like, find games. So we started playing Hearthstone, and everyone got a beta key apart from me.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to, like, go on Reddit and, like, go on, like, share Hearthstone and just, like, keep refreshing the page until someone, like, donated a key, and I was, like, really lucky that I got one, and I don't think I've even received a proper beta key as of yet, so I was pretty lucky about that.
And when was that? What month are we talking there? Because it was in beta for a while, wasn't it?
Early into beta, I think I got it around September-ish of last year. No, the year before, actually.
Yeah, 2012, yeah. Right, yeah.
2013.
13, right, yeah.
We're into 2015 now, BJ, in case you missed that.
Of course, yeah. I forgot we just had a new year.
Yeah,
so you got into it, eventually, you and friends, you sort of got into it in the early beta then.
Yeah, and I like enjoyed it, and I like card games because I used to play Pokemon TCG professionally. Right. Like, I used to go to the Pokemon TCG World Championships and, like, place well in Nationals as well.
Really?
So I was doing that for a while, and Hearthstone is another card game, so you can transition your skills well onto it. So I got into that really early on, and I understood the game. I enjoyed it because I enjoyed card games in general, and I really enjoyed it and realised I was quite good at the game, so I stuck with it.
And would you say, Dave, are you there?
Yeah, bitches, I'm here.
Oh, brilliant.
I've made it. I'm on my phone. Is the signal all right?
Yeah, it sounds brilliant, mate.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah. You could use that every
week. Hey, Green Sheep, you all right, buddy?
Yeah, I'm all right. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing well. There's been loads of jokes at your expense, Dave.
Have you been
Was it all about technology?
I mean, in fairness, we've been talking about your ineptitude with technology since week one, so it's surprising that it's you know, taking till week three for that actually to come through on an episode.
Dude, I don't even know what a Pokemon is. Is that what you just said? Was it Pokemon? I don't even know what that is. Let alone fucking technology.
We've also, Dave, been talking about your genetic equals that stroll up and down the beaches of Blackpool, but you'll have to tune in to the show to hear more about that.
What's that? Oh, we got donkey. Is that why I am a donkey?
Hey,
well done, mate. Look at that. Hey? He might not know his technology, but he knows his animals.
Get back to your background questions so we get to all of my good ones.
We just come to a good little segue there because... one thing Green Sheep was just saying that, like, when he got into Hearthstone, he used to play. Was it Pokemon professionally?
Yeah, Pokemon trading card game.
And Dave Green Sheep, Dave used to play poker professionally as well, and earn a living from it as well. And one thing, like, I knew when I got Dave into Hearthstone, I was saying, dude, you'll love it because if you like poker, you'll find this so addictive. Would you say, Green Sheep, that, you know, that when you've played other games, like, you know, like card games, and if you're into other strategy games and stuff, that it kind of makes it easier to transition into something like Hearthstone?
Yeah, definitely, because, like, the same, like, mindset goes into it, and, like, the same skills transition over, like, card counting, knowing what you've got left in your deck and, like, percentages and stuff. Like, all that's really important in Hearthstone and, like, in other card games, and in poker and of course.
Mm. And Dave, we haven't mentioned this for a while, but we did have that chat like when you first got into the game. But now you've been playing it for like 3 months. How do you think it kind of transitions and sort of measures up to poker and stuff?
To online poker, I would agree. It's very, very, very similar. I think that's what has enabled me to, get into it as quick as I have, because it is that close. It's not so close to, like live poker. There are some differences, but of course, as Green Sheep's saying, card counting, math is massively a part of the whole thing. Patience. I mean, Grisha, would you say like patience is big? I mean, if you're on ladder, I mean, big thing within poker is that you can sit there for, like 7 hours and just get bust on and beat on, and you could lose for a long, long period of time waiting for your moment. And it seems like that's what it's like in Hearthstone. You could be slogging away for hours before you get to whatever was the goal for the day. Is that similar?
Yeah, like, especially the decks like that, like Control Warrior, you just sit there and, like, let your opponent play the cards, you just deal with them, and then it's, like, really boring until you actually, like, draw the Grommash and, like, just kill them. And, like, patience, like, lots of people play their turns really fast as well, I feel. They don't think their turns through enough, and because there is a 90, you're allowed 90 seconds, so you might as well take up as much as 90 seconds as you need to find, like, the best play that you can.
Yeah, I was watching, is it Life Coach? I was watching him play.
Yeah.
And they reckon that he's a guy who, it'd be great if we could get him on the show at some point, actually, because he's a guy who almost annoys other players with how much he thinks it through. But he came up with that combo druid deck just before GBG. And, you could see him sort of thinking through sort of, two, three turns ahead, just using that full 90 seconds every turn.
Yeah, a life coach is like an amazing Hearthstone player. He's like, if you ever get the chance to talk to him, like, it's amazing how he thinks about the game and everything. Like, his mindset about the game, like, when you're playing the game, about the cards and, like, out of the game, how you should, like, live. And, like, it's just crazy what he talks about. But he's, like, amazing. And he used to be, a professional poker player as well. I think he's made enough money that he doesn't have to work again or something crazy, which is like quite amazing. He's just playing Hearthstone now, and he doesn't even play for money. He just plays for fun, which is what I like really like about him.
He's living the dream, right?
Yeah.
Sounds like he's on the next level then, in terms of because that's where poker's at now, right? That's where all of the top professional poker players are looking at their, their lifestyle. They're looking, I mean, it's to the point where they're looking at diet and routine and sleep and all of this kind of stuff. It sounds like he's there.
Yeah, like Life Coach, like all the events I've been with Life Coach, he sleeps so much. Like before an event, he literally sleeps up to the last 30 minutes. He's nearly late to the game. He doesn't watch the matches before him. He just sleeps until he has to play, and then he gets up and plays his match, and it's like amazing how calm he is and like how focused he is, even though he hasn't like watched any of his opponents play or haven't seen their decks or anything.
Yeah, absolutely. And so just coming back, James, you were saying there that you got into it with mates in that beta phase then. And sort of how did you sort of find the game first getting into it, and what was it like back then in the sort of beta phase?
Well, I watch a load of streams on Twitch. I used to watch a load of League of Legends streams, so I saw loads and loads of people like playing Hearthstone. I think it was like Dyrus and all the famous streamers and like top tier League players were all playing Hearthstone, because League players usually have to wait like 20, 30 minutes before they actually find a game. So they have nothing to do in that time, so they just open another game and play. And I saw a lot of Hearthstone, and I was quite interested in it because it was another card game. And then all my friends ended up getting it, so I went to get it as well. And I thought it was just really like, it really attracted me to the game because like it looked quite interesting, and like there's not been a proper interactive online card game before. I guess there's Magic the Gathering Online, but everyone says that's really bad.
Yeah, I've heard it's really bad. The actual, as it, not the game is bad, but just like as in
the user face. Yeah,
user face is real bad. Yeah. Yeah, because even is it Brian Kibler who's like just starting to really get into Hearthstone? He's a massive Magic pro, isn't he? And he's
there's been lots of Magic pros like PVDDR. I don't want to say his name, or I think that's it. And Reynard, of course. Reynard used to play Magic a lot, and a lot of people, a lot of Magic players, are transitioning onto Hearthstone, as well as like poker players and like all that, which is quite interesting that like everyone's coming together and just playing Hearthstone.
It's blowing like up, isn't it, as a
game?
Yeah,
from, like, everywhere, like...
But it's typical of anything that Blizzard does. You know, they never invent anything. They just improve on existing formulas, and that's you know, what they've done with Hearthstone. They've taken an existing, you know, system, an existing game system that's already established and went, we can do better than that. And, you know, and that's what they've done. They've produced something that can be eaten up like popcorn and picked up by the sort of the vast majority of the population and enjoyed. And that's the deal, really, you know.
Mm.
Yeah. The main thing about Hearthstone is that it's like mostly free. You can like, you don't have to play the game. No, you don't have to like put money into the game to like get all the cards. Like Kalento, like he played the game so much that he had all the cards. He didn't actually put any money on the cards until he needed a North American account, which is quite amazing.
That is amazing. I noticed the other day as well that. Have you heard about this Magic Amy who won the ESL series?
Yeah, I know a lot about Magic Amy.
And I was watching her play and she won it, and the first time I saw she beat Galento a few weeks back, but I was watching her play this week and every card was golden. But when I say every card, I mean like all the legendaries were gold. Like everything was golden. I was like, how has she done that? Like she must have. She's either spent a shed load of money to do that, or she just played it for some stupid amount of hours.
I think it's a bit of both, to be honest. But I don't think Magic Amy took the game seriously until she actually got into like she started playing tournaments and she actually got through the qualifiers into the ESL Legendary series, and then she like properly took the game serious, and now has joined Tempo Storm. So I think we'll be seeing a lot more of Magic Amy, but I think she's quite a good player.
Definitely. Well, some of the players this week. I mean, she took out some brilliant players, you know, some really top pros, and she had some really good decks. She had some interesting decks. So she had Maligos, not Maligos. What's his name in Hanlock?
Malganus.
That's the one. I knew it began with an M. But the big scary dude. So she's going to be on to watch. But anyway, back to you because you're our guest, not Magic Amy. For those who are still, you know, not quite sure, obviously, I first heard about you, Green Sheet, when I was watching the EU qualifiers for BlizzCon, and I was listening to podcasts. And all of us guys here on this podcast, we're still new to it, dude. Like, we got into the game, I think, was it 5 months ago, me and you, Franco? And about 3 months of you, Dave, is that right?
It was September, September, because it was, it was just after the ETC for me.
Yeah, something like that. I think we'd had a little ponder before, but seriously after that. So we're still quite new to it, Green Sheet, and the whole idea of this podcast is, you know, Project Hearthstone become legendary. The idea is that, like, Dave and I have only got to rank 2 so far. We haven't hit legend. And so it's like we're trying to get there, but we're taking people on the journey with us. So part of that journey was, like, we've got into watching tournaments, and I was watching, you know, I was watching the qualifiers and stuff, and it was so exciting. And is it right that you were like a last-minute replacement or something that you at the EU qualifiers? Is that right?
Yeah, because two players couldn't make it. It was MCP Noisy Boy and Toida.
Good name.
Yeah. They couldn't make it, unfortunately. Toida because of illness and Noisy Boy because of work. So they needed two replacements, and the two replacements were the two people that finished with the highest wins to losses ratio, like the highest difference. The two people with the highest difference from the stage 1 128-man qualifier got through, and it was me and K.O.R. K.O.R. had K.O.R.'s first with like a 9 difference between wins and losses, I think, and I had like 7.
Wow. That's such an insane story. So the two guys who qualified from the EU were both replacements.
Yeah, and like KR came like top four in the World Championships as well, so it's pretty crazy. Yeah. And he just blew up from there, as well as me, to be honest, because he just had that amazing story. He just came like, he's never been out of the country before, apart from when he went to DreamHack Stockholm. Mm. And he has like a kid, and he has a girlfriend as well, and his dream is to like open a bookstore in his small town of like Palermo.
Mm-hmm.
Just like quite a story, and like moved a lot of people, and like there was a load of support from Italian fans as well.
Yeah, I remember the commentators going on about it at the finals, and I was getting quite, that's the cool thing about it, you get really into it, and into all the characters, and each person's story, and, you know, like your story, you were like the youngest guy there, you'd come through as a last minute replacement, and you ended up beating some big players. Now, how did you qualify then to put yourself in place for that green sheet, and what made you like decide to go for it?
Well, to start it all off, I was just playing in like weekly tournaments, but like at the beginning, I was just playing for fun. I didn't think it would be like that this big and make it so far, but I just kept playing like ladder, and before Legend, there was like another ranking system, and I got highest there. It was like three-star master, I think that was the highest. So I realized I was decent at the game, maybe not top tier, but I was pretty good at it since I hit like the top rank. And then the new ranking system kicked in where you had to get like legend rank, and they actually placed you in the region. So I played the game, and the last day of the season I actually hit legendary, and thought, okay, so I can hit legendary this season, let's try again next season. So I just kept doing that. I didn't play in many tournaments, but I just kept playing ladder, and then I realized once I got to legend, I kept constantly hitting like under top 50 legend, and the monthly Blizzard rankings like showed that, and that was pretty interesting because it was quite cool getting your name onto that. And yeah, I thought I might as well start playing tournaments now and see how well I'm doing there. I won a few weekly tournaments for like €100. And $100 and that. And then I got to know a few people in the community, and it seemed really cool. And I met more and more people, and like just made a load of friends. And eventually, like one of my friends came up to me, and we both realized we were both British. And that was pretty cool as well, because I just added this random guy from nowhere, and he was British as well, and we were both British. And he came up to me one day and told, and after seeing like my performances in tournaments, he told me that Team Dignitas, which is currently the team I'm on, is looking for a Hearthstone team. And I was like really excited about that, since I know Team Dignitas from like League of Legends, and they're really successful esports team and like the biggest team in the UK. So yeah, I was really stoked about that. And I got into contact with Michael O'Dell, the managing director, like the guy's my boss right now, and I told him who I was and what I've done, and I asked him could I be on his Hearthstone team. And after like a few negotiations and things, I ended up on the Hearthstone team, which is quite amazing because all my friends have always dreamed about like being on like professional team like Team Dignitas or like TSM or like one of them, the big name brands.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really amazing being on Team Dignitas. And going on to like these tournaments, due to being on Team Dignitas, I was like really pumped to play the game. I like played the game so much. I played like 10 hours a day or something crazy. I just practice.
And how did you find time for college work when you were doing 10 hours a day?
I somehow fit in. Sometimes I did like the work at like lunch times at school and stuff, just so I had more time on Hearthstone. I was like really into it, and then they announced the how you qualify for the World Championships, and I thought you need a top 16 in ladder placement. Unfortunately, I got top 16, but I ended up losing it onto like the last days of the season, like every time, because a lot of people just like play 24 hours on that day, and Like, it's just a really big struggle because top 16 is really important. So I unfortunately couldn't get a top 16 spot, but I ended up winning a Zotac Cup, which got me a placement in the 128 man qualifier, and I also won a Fireside Gathering, which gave me 1-2. So that's how I actually got into the 128 man qualifier, and from there on I just won. It just went crazy from there. I went 5-3 in the first phase qualifiers, losing to Tice NL in the final round. So he's basically the guy who kicked me out. And
you got your revenge.
Yeah, I got revenge on.
So you won the Zotac Cup, then you do a 128 man qualifier, and then you're in the EU qualifiers for the world, the EU qualifiers. Is that right?
Yeah. So it's quite a task.
It's incredible. It's no wonder those guys. You know, when you watch the final 16 at the World Championship, no wonder it's just on another level. The amount of stuff you've had to go through, the amount of players. So you get to the EU qualifiers, you finally get in, you find out, you know, last minute that you're going to be in there. And how did you feel, and how did you sort of go about your preparation and how did you sort of go about deciding on the decks you were going to take and stuff?
Well, I felt amazing, of course, because at first I didn't think I was going to make it in. I was really sad because I lost in the last round of the qualifiers. But after learning that, I was like really pumped, and I wanted to actually get into World Championships because that's what I've been dreaming of like the whole year. So all the preparation I did was with my teammates, Blackout and Kumasok back then. They helped me a lot. Like, during the event as well, they like told me what decks I should choose and the counters for each deck and what decks to ban, as well as help me like jot down what my future opponents would be playing and what cards they had in their deck and what to look out for. But we tested a lot, and we like share each other's lists, and we like give each other like information about everything. So that's basically what like we do as a team, and it's pretty cool.
And when you say testing, Green Shoot, how do you go about testing? So, for example, I know, and we'll get onto this, I'm sure, but I know your Shaman did very, very well for you at the EU qualifiers. So, like, when you're testing, are you just drilling games with your Shaman, and are you playing against what you think will be a bad matchup, or are you drilling games against to play around specific cards or to play around the decks that you want to play against? How do you go about it?
Well, basically, we go on ladder and see what decks are around, and then we try to like rebuild them decks that are quite popular at the moment. But then we talk about the decks, what we think should be changed, if anything, and what cards should be changed, why they should be changed and whatnot. And we go around this, and every time we change it, we kind of test it out against like every single other deck that will be popular and what we think people will be playing like 5 times, and then we jot down what are like which deck's gonna win like 60-40 or something for like every matchup, and we see if we can further improve the deck. We do this like every time, and after that we like try it on ladder, because ladder's a great place for like finding out what people are playing at the moment and what you should look out for, because there might be some surprises. So we just keep practicing like this, playing ladder, and keep like improving on our decks and everything. And we like theorycraft like every 2 or 3 days. Like, we just come together, like a bunch of us, and we discuss what decks are in right now, what decks are out, what we think should be the most banned deck of the tournament, why we should ban it, and what if we ban that deck, what other decks we should take. And basically we just talk about everything about the game.
So a lot of it is more just conversation rather than actually playing.
A lot of it is conversation. I say it's like 50-50. Like, I think theory crafting is really important because you have to like sit down and actually think about what combos are good, what should be good right now, and then you can begin testing and see if it's actually good.
Mm.
When you say come together, Gucci, do you mean like just on Skype, like we are now? So a bunch of you guys get together, you go, right, dudes, this is what we're going to talk about tonight. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, basically, we like put on a screen share, we like get all our decks up, and then we like go in game and like practice against each other, play each other with like certain decks that we chose.
And I've heard like dudes talk about like part of teams, and like you see teams in all kinds of sports all over the place. But when you say like you have like a bit of back and forth before you joined Dignitas, is it the team that you're in?
Yeah, and Team Dignitas.
And you've got a boss. And do you mean as in you're paid? Is that what you mean here, or do you mean as in he'll tell you what tournaments to go into, or it's like a coach, or there's like and when you say there's a bit of back and forth, it's more like the team has got like certain like a memorandum, like a way of acting, the way that you're going to be and what you stand for as a team. What do you mean when you say you're part of like a bigger team?
Well, basically, Team Dignitas does like. They provide all the travel support, they provide all the accommodation, and I also get to, like, wear their jersey, which is quite cool. And I am, in fact, getting paid every month a salary.
Right.
So this is actually, like, my profession, I guess. And
they're a professional gaming company, that's right, didn't they? They don't just do, you know, Hearthstone, they do... quite a few games, don't they?
Like yeah, Starcraft, they do a lot of games. They sponsor like people from all around the globe. We've got a League of Legends team that's like half Korean, half American. We have a Smite team, which is American. We have a Trackmania team, a Counter-Strike team, and a few more other games that I forgot right now. But yeah, Team Dignitas is like a great organization. They've like helped me and like. They help me with the things that I can't, like, that would be hard for me to do, like, booking, like, travel and stuff. They, like, do it
logistics,
all for me.
All the logistics. Yeah. Yeah.
And then they, like, provide you with gaming gear as well from the sponsors. And it's just great as well. And Team Dings has as a team, so, you also get, like, the support staff and people who just look after your events. Like, sometimes there are Team Dings has people at events and, just like there, so you can talk to them. They're just like friends in general, to be honest. I don't think that much of them as like colleagues or like bosses. I just think of them as like all friends, and we're just all in this together because we all love like our games, we all love esports and like just being part of this community. And of course, in a team, it might not be this prevalent in Hearthstone, but I think it's still really important because. As a team, you always know that there's someone like equal skill level or near your skill level, so you can practice with them. You can like, you both have like similar mindsets about the game, and it's just someone you can trust and like talk with about the game, and you know that they're as good as you, and they know you know they'll contribute well to what you're thinking about.
How much of an advantage do you think that is then? Because If some other opponent is, you know, they're having to worry about like travel, money, got to get across there. Holy shit, I'm really nervous. I can't sleep. I wish I had someone to speak to. Whereas you've got it all sorted. All them worries are gone. How much of an advantage is that?
I think it's a great advantage because I'm just solely focused on like the game itself. I don't have to worry about anything because I know people are taking care of that. Like even like food and stuff, sometimes I don't have to worry because like they just get. Take you to restaurants and stuff, but it's really cool being part of Team Dignitas. Like, it's just a giant help, and you just know there'll be people like there, like familiar faces you'll know.
You get the VIP really treatment.
Yeah, kind of, but it's like really reassuring since like they're like your next family. Like they do as much as me as like my parents would have, I guess.
I think it's something that. You know, certainly like Dave would be very interested in doing if they threw in a bunch of hookers afterwards. You'd be right in amongst that.
I've just noted that down. I thought, oh, it's all good. It's almost perfect. If only
they just sorted them out with some hookers, some big hookers. You like some big. Then he'd be right in amongst that professional gaming community, wouldn't you, Dave?
And there we go, taking giant strides towards becoming a family-orientated podcast.
Have we already had feedback about that? We've had a little bit of feedback.
We're keeping it a little bit. Well, we were. We're doing all right. It's all right, Frankie. You're the editor, mate. You're the editor, so you can edit yourself.
I can keep it in the extra. Yeah.
So back to your journey then, Green Sheep. So you said in your interview at the tournament and the qualifiers that you were worried. The guy you were worried about facing was Colento. Now, for those who don't follow the scene, Colento is widely regarded as the best, or if not the best, sort of one of the top 3 to 5 players in the world. Incredible. I love watching him. Incredible player. But you didn't actually face Colento, did you? But you in the end.
No, I didn't.
But you did face a couple of really big European players. One was Thijs, who beat you, you said, in the 1-8 man tournament. And then you played, is it the Fishu? Is that how you pronounce it?
I played Loello, and then I played the...
To be honest, when you... I simply thought they were favourites to win those. Quite surprised, weren't they, like, that when you beat Tyson? I don't know if you get to hear the commentary when you're in it.
Yeah, I like rewatched it a few times. It was like quite interesting to hear what they said.
Yeah, you proper like you blew everyone away basically. You beat some massive names in it, and so when you were up against it and you were playing those guys, like, you've obviously gone through so much and you now you're playing some of the top players in Europe, and you know now you're just a few games literally away from qualifying going to Anaheim for the World Championships, and so you know, like, what was that like at that point? I think it was this Fishu was the final game that I watched, and you ended up blitzing it with this Shaman deck, and
yeah,
I just got to get your thoughts on, like, what, you know, a little bit more about the Shaman deck in particular, because, like, it really carried you home. So, like, what went into that, and why did you choose that deck, and how did it do so well for you?
Well, I'll begin with, like, the match with Thijs, because, like, the first game I played with in the 128-man qualifier was really close. I think we both, like, ended up top-decking. Like, we were both, like, fatiguing, and we just, like, ended up top-decking. And unfortunately, he top-decked the better and won the game. It was, like, 3-2. It was really close. I think it was, like, Warrior versus Shaman in the last game.
Mm-hmm.
But to think I had, like, the first match of the European qualifiers that I'd be playing him again, I was, like, really happy, because I just wanted that revenge, and I just wanted to beat him to prove a point that I can.
Yeah.
And I was actually quite nervous the first game, because I knew he'd beat me, so I knew he was a really good player as well, because he like, had this giant streak in the iHalfU King of the Hill, where you, like, just beat 10 people in a row. Like, that was just a crazy run. I think he beat, like, every single professional player there was.
Oh, that was right, yeah. He had a massive, crazy run. He was beating everyone, wasn't he? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, I knew he had, like, that he was really talented, and I wasn't actually sure myself if I could actually do it, but in the end, I actually pulled through and beat him, and it was, like, the greatest moment of my life. It just felt so great, like, all the odds were against me. I don't think anyone thought I'd win, because, like, Thijs was just so favourited. I just come out of nowhere, just joined Team Dignitas, and it was basically just, nobody back then. A few people knew me, but not a lot. I hadn't placed amazing at any of, like, international tournaments just yet. And it was just, like, my breakout into the scene, I guess.
And what was the deck that got you through that match?
It was actually Shaman again. I won the last two games with Shaman. I was 2-1 down, but I finished it with Shaman.
Wow. That deck did some work for you in that tournament.
Yeah. The Fishu was, like, the game that stood out as well, because I won that 3-0 while everyone else was, like, 3-2 or 3-1 in the last game. And it just felt so good to, like, just sweep the game, just... You know, you're through, like, 1-0, 2-0, 3-0. You don't lose a game, so you don't lose confidence. And you just see the crowd, like, really cheering, and, like, it was really amazing feeling up on the stage as well.
Yeah.
It didn't make me nervous or anything, but it just felt so immense, like, so many people just watching you.
Yeah.
All eyes on you.
It's a bit different from sitting in your bedroom and playing ladder, right?
Yeah, definitely. Like, there's no pressure here. You just they can't even see your face, your opponents. You can't see your opponent's face. Like, you can't tell what they're thinking, like.
Yeah.
You don't even know if they're, like, a boy or a girl, to be honest.
No.
There might even be a bot.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. A few months ago, they all were.
Yeah.
Especially those Sherman players, yeah. So, and you're absolutely right, because we have a little league that we do every week, Green Sheep. There's about 20 people that play in it. It's not, you know, we're not all great players. We're just that play it and stuff, but it's just for fun. And actually, one week I played Franco, and I was at Franco's house, so we played it in the same room. And you're absolutely right, because there was so much psychology that started going on, because he'd be like, oh, you've got me, and I'd be like, yes, I've got him, and then he'd be bluffing me and all sorts of stuff that never happened.
Yeah, ice block, motherfucker.
Poker faces.
Yeah. Yeah, it was good. And, thing, you really added another dimension to the game. Like, I understood at that point, like, you know, how good the game could be when you do it in person, as opposed to just, you know, over a screen sort of thing. You know, it's like, because, you know, we, Green Sheep, we come from a sort of tournament community and another game system, and that's how we know each other, in fact. You know, and that's what we all enjoy doing, was sort of going to tournaments and socialising. We all are geeks like ourselves. And it just seems that Hearthstone, you know, it has the option to do that, but just do it in a much easier way. You know, like the actual organisation it takes to arrange tournaments, in-person tournaments, you know, like Hearthside Gardens with Hearthstone, is just nothing like as much hassle as it was when we were sort of previously and were playing other things, you know?
Yeah, like, I've been to loads of, like, fire gatherings myself, and they're, like, really amazing that you actually, like, you meet people online, but then at fireside gatherings, you actually see who they are. It's really interesting talking to them and, like, playing beside them, because you all play the same game and, like, you all have the same interests. It's just amazing.
What about present Green Sheep when you were at the World Championship? So obviously, of course, you're going to be nervous, and of course, there's a lot riding on it, and of course, you would have known all of the players pretty much, and because you've prepped it, you had some idea maybe of what they were going to take and their styles. But what I wondered was that when I was watching it, it's like I'd only really just got into Hearthstone. So really, watching that World Championships was what made me think, right, I'm going to play this game. But I didn't know anybody. So it was you, Firebat, and there's a guy called Teray. I don't know where he was from, but he was like very, like very creative. Like, he'd do stuff that was kind of like, you know, super weird. And it like caught even the commentators out. So going into what was like, I suppose, the final, the end of it, the groups, the set, kind of second group stage, I thought it was one of you three that were going to take it. But I wonder whether that's because I didn't know any of them. Like the only one I knew was this Colento, because BJ, you'd mentioned him, but I didn't really know anyone. But while you were there, did you sense that there was a presence, i.e. like either you saw a guy and realized, right, he walks his style, or maybe the way that people would talk about someone that then not makes them more than they are, but suddenly you fear them more than the other, because you get that in other games, but because we're online, you don't always see people to get that kind of fear.
Oh, yeah, I know most of the players, like the American players, like I knew most of them. I knew most of them. I heard their names and everything on like ladder. I played against a few of them. I knew all the EU people, except from KR, who was like, just like came out of nowhere and just performed really well. But there's kind of a gap between like the Western scene and like the Asian scene. Like, not many people know the Korean players, and still not yet like the Chinese scene as well. It's like torn away from us. Like, people say they were like worse than us and they're like a few meters behind, but after seeing them play, I felt they're like as good as us, especially like Tiddler Celestial, who made it into the final. I think his play was like amazing. I felt they were just like as good as us, even though we didn't know much about them. And especially like Kranich, he really like stood out as well with his like combo warrior deck. They just bring like crazy things, but I actually play them really well and they actually work out for them.
That combo warrior deck, when he got Colento with that last, you know, when Colento could have cleared the board as well, but he had like seven minions and the guy had one, and you were just like, you just never could see that coming. And I mean, now everyone would be thinking about it, but you know, you just could never see it coming. He could have cleared it, he didn't, and then he top decked the card, and it's a four piece combo. And he does 18 damage and knocks the favorite out. It was incredible.
Yeah,
Yeah.
If you put money on anyone clearing the board, though, it'd be Colento. Like he always clears board every single time. Like he's super careful. So if you put your money on anyone to clear the board in that scenario, Colento would have done it. So if he's not doing it, no one does it.
It was surprising.
Yeah,
it was
definitely. I think Colento was like one of the favorite. Yeah, one of the definite favorites after like so many like of us were knocked out in like the group stages. I think Terray played really well as well. Firebat, of course. Firebat is like an amazing player, and he like the way he like practices and prepares for the tournaments that he plays in is like incredible. He puts so much time and effort into it, and he like brings like kind of weird things as well. Like at DreamHack Winter, he played Panda against me. UFO Brewmaster. His big game hunter against me in the Handlock game.
He killed just, two of your giants.
Yeah. That was just game changing. But I don't think anyone in the world would have played UFO Brewmaster except Firebat. He's just the one that like puts these weird cards in his deck. People say they won't work, but he always makes them work somehow.
Yeah, really cool, really cool. So when you went to the finals, then you beat, you know, you got your revenge on Tice, you beat the Fishu, and essentially that was the final of your EU qualifier. You got out there, and I mean, we were watching it on sort of YouTube and stuff, and the place first, it just looked amazing. The environment looked fantastic. It's made us want to kind of go there one day and certainly start going to other events like DreamHacks and DreamHack Summer is what I'm looking at and things like that. But the atmosphere looked superb. And I imagine playing must have been quite nerve-wracking. And you played Kranich in your first game, and then you played Queer. I don't know if it's Queero. I'm not.
Chiro.
Chiro. It's with a Q, but it's Ch, isn't it? Chiro. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it didn't quite go as well for you, did it? And you had changed your deck. So what was the thinking going into the final? Because even that Shaman deck that did so much work for you, you did make changes to it, didn't you, going into the final?
Yeah, I think I put another Doomhammer in because that was really popular at the moment and I felt it was really good. It was innovated by Chucky, who's currently on my team as well. Shout out there.
I think we're gonna get Chucky on the podcast, hopefully. I did reach out to him the other day, and he's trying to get in touch. It's quite hard trying to get in touch with everyone, but I think he's gonna come on at some point. So anyway,
well, carry on. Fairness, if James knows him, then it's likely that he'll chat to him after the show and say, look, yeah, these guys are just fools. There's no way you want to go on that podcast. probably want to scrap that idea, BJ. Probably just want to move on to something else.
Especially that Scots guy. He was asking me questions. I had no idea what he was saying. Get talking about hookers. I don't know.
It's a change when I'm not understanding you. You know what I mean? At least it's for your neck of the woods this time.
Imagine changing the tone as well. I can't imagine there are too many Hearthstone podcasts that talk about hookers. I mean, where did it come from, Frankie? Where did it come from?
Well, usually from you, mate. You know what I mean? But it depends. It's pain, to be honest.
I was having technical difficulties.
Let's not even go there. If we start psychoanalyzing Frankie, this is going to turn into a whole other podcast. Anyway, Green Sheep. BlizzCon, hurry.
Right. As I was going on about, I was playing Chucky's, kind of Chucky's version of the deck. It ran double Doomhammer, but I felt like even within like a few weeks, the meta could shift really drastically, and I think that my deck would have been, like, not performed as well, even though my Shaman didn't perform as well as I'd like it to. I think my old one wouldn't have performed as well as my new one, since people just change their decks, like one or two cards, but it just changes the whole situation and the matchups completely differently. So I think it's really important to like keep with the meta and like keep changing your decks. You want to be the one that plays the new cards that like win all the games. Like you just have one tournament where someone changes one card in their deck and they just like sweeps the tournament. Like Chucky's double Doomhammer Shaman deck, Savitz ran it in Steep Story Cup 2, and I think he was like one of the only people to run it, but it just carried them through the tournament and like won it. Though it's just like a one card change, like you put another Doomhammer in, but it just makes such a difference. So I felt like all my decks needed some kind of like touching up.
And so that when you got into that first game with Kranich, and he ended up taking the series 3-0, didn't he? I think And it looked like, and I was watching, it looked like you were getting a bit kind of like, you were one of the guys that was quite visibly frustrated. And I kind of like that, because a lot of people play like this poker face kind of thing. But you were, when you were emotional, you showed it. And even the commentators picked up on it. And I could see that, like, you were getting it. I don't know whether it was, what was it? Was it Aaron? Did you feel you'd made a mistake somewhere? What was getting to you in that game?
I just felt like I had all the three games. I just felt like I had no chance of winning the games because of like the starts I got and like the starts he got. So it just felt like kind of frustrating knowing that you're like starting off losing a game because like your opening hand's kind of, it might be okay, but his opening hand's like way better. It just like kind of frustrates you. Although it like, I played a pretty good poker face in like the European Championships. I felt like showing a bit of emotions, pretty good to like liven up the stream a bit, and like so yeah, I showed a bit of like emotion there, and because I did lose the series 3-0. I think it was to his shaman deck as well, which is kind of like yeah. Like I was dominating with shaman at first, but now someone else is dominating me with shaman. It's quite ironic.
Is it the stage that you're on as well? Because like you know, so it's not like you're playing ladder where 9 times out of 10 you're probably better than the guy that you're playing, and oh dear, I've got, you know, a bad mulligan here. This ain't great, but you know what? I might come back against this. And even at the World Championships, you have one game where you mulligan badly, and you think, Jesus, that won't happen again. Then will it? And it happens again. Was it because of the stage you were on as well?
Yeah, like I knew so much was on the line. I really want to like win all my games. I really want to be the world champion. Everything is just like it's really high stakes at that moment, and it's not good knowing that you didn't have the best of starts, and it's just really like demoralizing. Especially when like I didn't know much about Kranich, so I didn't know how good he was actually, but I think I was one of the favorites to win that group, or like come out of the group at least. I think I just felt like really disappointed myself.
Yeah, that certainly came through. But I mean, you know, like we've already said, certainly nothing in with hindsight you've reached the last 16 in the world, and the amount of stuff you've gone through to get that is just, I thought it was incredible. Plus, you were the only guy from the UK there, right? Although, was your teammate also there, Number Guy? Was he on your team?
Number Guy's not on my team, but one of my teammates was there because I needed I needed a guardian because I had to be 18 to like enter the event or something. So one of my teammates came along with me to like support me and cheer me on.
Cool.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely.
I was going to ask that, right? Just because it's one of the things that I wondered. Like, I was watching it. I had it on my like a big TV, and then I had my laptop on the right. And right at that time, when you were out there was a big thing in the UK about like, I suppose it's really like people bunking off. But really, what it was like families going away on holiday, and then those that are at school, college, and university are just like they're just fucking off really when they in school term time, and then. Like in this country, in the UK, we've seen convictions and stuff like that, not on the pupil, but on the parents and whatnot. So did you go to your college? Did you ask them? Say, look, like this is going to sound weird now, but I'm in the final of a world championship and I need some time off. Did you not? Or should I not be saying this because this could get out and your college hear about it?
No, it's fine. Like every time I actually have to ask them, like every time I want time off for a tournament, and that was like the first time it began with the Stockholm qualifiers, but I told them all about it and about how big of an opportunity it was. And I go to a private school, so it's a bit lenient, I guess, in taking days off, but they still disliked it, but I just told them how big of an opportunity this was and how big it was for me, and they understood and they just let me have the time off. And that's what's going on ever since.
And it's leading to a career for you, so you know it's certainly working out.
Yeah.
With regards to the BlizzCon, then, you know, is there anything else you would mention about just the experience in terms of being there at the event and what it was like to compete in the tournament?
Being there was amazing. I'd never seen so many people like in one place in my life. It was just like so many people. There's like 20,000-30,000 people in the venue, and like watching Hearthstone, there was like 2,000 people like just sat there watching Hearthstone or something. Like the like seats everywhere, and there's just like 4 or 5 screens just dedicated to Hearthstone. It was just crazy. I actually sat up on the stage a few times to like watch the games up there, and I think I sat with a few other players as well, and just looking out amongst the crowd was like so amazing. There were so many people there, and they're all like cheering and screaming, like at every like top deck, every like play the person made, and everything in general. There was other games at the events as well, like the new releases from Blizzard, like Overwatch, their new FPS game, and Heroes of the Storm. So you got to play them, and it was actually quite fun. And there was just so many people, new people that you met at the event, which made it even more awesome.
Yeah, I'm sure you must have made a lot of new friends and contacts and stuff from going. And also GVG, right? Didn't they have demo pods the first time
they
played GVG?
They unveiled GVG right there, that we saw like all the cards and everything, and there was like panels on all the cards, and we actually got to test out a few of them, like some of the mech cards and some of the goblin cards.
And when you were actually at the event, obviously you've got hindsight now, but when you were actually there, what was the card or the couple of cards that were getting you excited?
Cards were getting me excited. I think it was Mad Bomber and Madder Bomber and Bomb Lobber. They just seem like really fun cards, because Madder Bomber has 6 bombs. Like, that's just crazy. It's just like double the Mad Bomber. And Bomb Lobber just seemed really strong, because it was like a counter to Conceal Auctioneer, which is really strong. But then they decided to nerf the Auctioneer anyway, so it didn't really matter for us much. But I thought that was like going to be the end of like the reign of Miracle Rogue.
But then Blizzard just ended it with a nerf, really, didn't they?
Yeah.
So you know, BlizzCon sort of, I think it was, December it finished? No, November it happened. So we came back, we had a couple of weeks, and then the GVG stuff finally came out. I was one of the many guys like really eagerly were waiting the cards, and then quite frustrated on the day, because in the EU we had loads of problems with it. But all that since feels like history now. And what have you been up to since then? So since December, since you've had the new cards, how has the game changed for you, and what some of the decks that you're sort of messing around with?
Well, definitely since like 100 and something cards have been, like 130 cards have been added, there's been a lot more preparation going into tournaments, and I don't think half the decks that will be played in the future have been discovered yet. There's just so many possibilities that people haven't thought about yet. And like some of the cards that seem good aren't being played yet. So I think there'll be a lot of change in the future, and just see who will be the person that innovates these new decks. Hopefully might be me, might be someone else. But it's going to be really interesting from now on. And hopefully Blizzard will just keep like grinding out these cards and just like keep the game interesting, because it was getting, a bit boring at the time, but because I just played the game for like a year straight with all the same cards. There wasn't anything new. But GVG's just like made the game so much more interesting for me. I just want to play the game like every second.
Mm.
So do you think it's made it more like versatile? That there's still some of the old, you know, the old styles like Handlock and Zoo and all that. They're still about. And obviously Zoo is super powerful last month. But do you think it's made it more, so you can have a similar style? You might have a Zoo then, for instance, or you might have a Mech Mage, but there's different cards. It might be like 5 different cards with each one, but both can do super well on ladder or do super well in the tournament. Do you think that is what's taking place now, or is it something different?
Oh yeah, every time like there's more things in a game, then there's more opportunities for people, as more things to do. So although there might be like one person might run a kind of Zoo deck, another person might run a different kind. As we saw, like Zixo quite recently ran an Implosion Sea Giant Zoo, which is really popular, and it got him rank 1 legend on every server. Like all 3 servers. I mean, I think the only server he didn't get it on was the Korean server. or he got it in like Taiwan server, he got it on EU and NA. He was ranked one at Legend like the same time, which is really impressive by him. But as you see, like an old deck like Zoo can be like changed in a way that is like quite different, because like Implosion Sea Giant, no one ever would have like thought of Sea Giants being in like anything but Shaman or like, or even played, to be honest. But like Implosion, this one card has just opened up the options. Like the new cards kind of just open up the options for like old cards.
Absolutely. I've seen things like, a good example of that would be Cultmaster. I've seen Cultmaster played in a lot more decks
like,
now.
Everyone thought Cultmaster was just like a terrible card. It was too slow. But now you have Mustafa Battle. You spawn a load of minions that you just slam down your Cultmaster, trade in the minions, and just draw a load of cards.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. And so what have you been up to like in the last couple of weeks? And what are some of the decks that you've been sort of trying on ladder?
I've been testing a lot of things at the moment, like a lot of versions of Zoo, Druid, and like Mage. Mages has been interesting, but the most thing I'm like the deck that I'm testing the most is a kind of control warlock deck. It's kind of like Dark Quanix's deck, if you've seen that. He played that at one of the ESL weeks. Like,
that's right.
It was just like really, it came out of nowhere. Like, he played it against me in practice a few times. And I was like, whoa, what is this deck? And it just caught me off guard. Like, it was completely different to anything I'd seen. I thought it was Handlock at the beginning, but then he like played down this, I can't remember what the card's called, the 3/5 that does 2 damage to a minion that's not a mech. Just played down that card, I was like, what is this card doing in Handlock? And then he just played Implosion, a load of spells, and finished me off with And he just finished me off with this, like, Arcane Golem combo. I was like, well, I haven't seen that since, test Season 2 or something in, like, Handlock. It just brought it out in, like, a warlock day. It was just crazy, and I've just been testing out variations of that, seeing if I improve it with like Molten Giants and like Jiraxxus, like make it more demon-y, some more minions, but just messing around with that since it seems really interesting. It actually works quite well.
And you find it's been working well on ladder, that deck, because some decks don't work as well from tournaments to ladder, do they?
I've been testing out ladder. It does okay, but I think it'll do better in tournaments. But it just seems like a really interesting deck that's really unique to all the other decks.
So what would you say is the difference then? Because I mean, I struggle on ladder, you know. And from what you're saying, it sounds like I would just be awesome at tournaments. Is how I'm taking that. So what would you say is the sort of main difference then between playing on ladder and playing in a tournament?
Well, on ladder, you need a deck that basically is good against every other deck. Like, a good example is, like, Zoo or, like, Hunter, which doesn't have really any hard counters. The only thing that hard counters Hunter is Warrior. But if you run high mains, then Hunter still has a fighting chance. And Zoo is only really countered by Freeze Mage, and not many people place Freeze Mage on ladder. So these are why a load of people just play, like, Zoo and Hunter on ladder, because they're, like, good against other decks. All the other decks, and have like a 50-50 matchup against even like the bad matchups. So that's why it's good on ladder, because ladder, like anything could happen. Like you can see any decks, but in like tournaments, most tournaments have a ban right now, so you can like pick out what decks you want to play against and what you don't want to play against, and you actually like you kind of know what decks people be playing, because not many people try out crazy things on tournaments as they will in ladder. So you kind of know that if it's like a mage, it'll probably be like a freeze mage, maybe a kind of like duplicate mage or something. Or if it's like a paladin, most likely it'll be like the Strifeco paladin that he played. But a few people take the risk of playing like something completely unique in tournaments. So it's a big change, because you actually know what's going to be played in tournaments, while ladder is just all hell breaks loose on ladder. Like, people just play like random cards. Like, I've seen Deathwing be played while like no one plays Deathwing, and like even what's it called, Alarmo Bot, like people play like Alarmo Bot legendary decks. Like, it's just crazy.
How do you approach ladder then in terms of your goal. Because if you're practicing, say you're practicing that warlock deck then, but you're thinking in your head, really, I'm practicing this for a tournament. Ideally, would you rather practice that with your teammates because they know too? Or you think, well, it's just for a tournament. It doesn't matter where I end up on ladder because that's what the goal is. But then would you switch up the deck, play a different deck if you thought, right, I'm gonna hit legend now and I'm going to go past that and I'm going to push to get a really high legend rank?
Well, normally at the start of the season, I just play like a deck I'm confident with to like legend. I play like, sometimes I play like Zoo, I play Hanlog, I play Hunter, and I play like Druid. They're like the decks I'm really confident in that I know I'll like play them near perfectly and just like win most of the games. So I play these to legend, then I don't really care about my legend ranking since I'm already in legend until like the last week or so. So I just begin testing decks and just like the Warlock deck, for example, I just play the deck on ladder, see how it goes with other like common decks, and after I do that, I test with my teammates and see if it's like the same with if my teammates are playing it and my practice partners. So that's basically how I go about. But if I want to like properly go for like rank one legend or something, I just play something I'm really really confident in that I tested enough to know that will win against most of the things, and I know I'll play really well. So that in my case might be like Hunter, because I play Hunter really a lot, like different variations. Sometimes I play like really aggressive, like all face Hunter. Sometimes I play like control Hunter, like high main, high master and stuff. Or like I play Hanlog, which is really a really good deck, because Hanlog is basically a deck that you can't. I think it requires a lot of skill to play Hanlog. So like there's a lot of decisions you can make, and you probably win every game that you play if you play Hanlock perfectly, or near every game. There's like not a lot of luck factor involved with Hanlock.
Hanlock was pretty nasty before GVG came out. Do you think it's got better just as a deck? So regardless, say there was two guys playing Hanlock prior and playing post GVG, the same guy, and so he's at the same level. Do you think that you'll do better now with things like that heal bot, which you can have in? Is it better as a deck?
Well, since GVG, there has been one major change to Hanlock. Soulfire is now one mana, and basically no one's playing Soulfire anymore. Mm-hmm. So even including all the GVG cards, like the new heal bots, and some people play Recombobulator to like fully heal their giants and stuff. I think Hanlock is about the same, because like they've gained like Healbot, which is an amazing card for Hanlock, and they've gained like in place of Soulfire, they've got Dark Bomb, but I still think Soulfire is a really like much better than Dark Bomb, but I think it like evens out because they've got Healbot now. But there are a lot of things that haven't been tested in Hanlock just as yet, so it might, if we're just talking about like Hanlock versus like Hanlock and not against like the other decks, then I think Hanlock should be a bit better because there's more options available.
I love what you said there, James, about Hanlock as well, because it when you said that it's so true, that if there's always like a maze of possible options and plays that you can make, and if you played the right decision, you said if you put the right decision every time, you'd never lose. And I remember playing Hanlock a few months ago, and I played it excessively, and it was a deck I thought, I've really got to get good with this deck. And I started to get good with the deck, and I went in some weekly tournaments, and I actually went to the semi-final in one. And for a guy who hasn't even hit Legend, like I beat some Legend players and stuff, and one guy I was chatting with, and I think it was just because I was practicing it. But the other day I went on ladder with it, and all I played was like Zoo and Hunter, and I was losing all the time, and I got so annoyed. I was like, I used to beat Zoo like 80% of the time in Hanlock, but I didn't. And then I started thinking, you know, it must be the deck. And then I realized like it's not the deck, it's that like the all the options and stuff, like where I was so tuned into the deck when I was playing it 3 months ago, I've just picked it up and I've forgotten all that stuff. So I was like, what was I mulliganing, and why was I mulliganing that against that, and what cards were I playing around? I wasn't thinking, I had no answers for it because I'd just forgotten it all. So I really like what you said there about the deck.
Yeah, definitely. Like, you always see, like, the same people that are top of, like, Legend, like, Zixo. He's, like, really, he specializes in Zoo a lot. Like, he just builds, like, a really unique Zoo and does really well with it. And, like, you see, like, Life Coach and, like, Kalento. Kalento is really good at, like, Rogue and, like, Freeze Mage, all these, like, control types of decks on Life Coach as well. And you just see them at, like, top of Legend every single time. And you must know that they're playing the deck amazingly, because to consistently hit like high ranking Legend, you have to have an 80 or like even higher percent win rate to actually climb.
Mm.
And it's just showing that Hearthstone, many people say it's like RNG, there's a load of RNG going on. If people can consistently hit high Legend like that, then there's definitely something other than RNG going on. Like, there's a lot of skill involved.
Uh-huh. That's the same argument in poker, though, isn't it? I mean, it's like, yeah. You know, the best guy in the world. I mean, it's conceivable then, Grishu, that you could play someone who somehow has just turned on Hearthstone and just happens to have some really good cards. So they're on someone else's account, and you could conceivably play them for one game and they could beat you. Playing for 100 games, 300, 1,000 games, and that one game is probably the only one they're going to get. So there is luck. Of course there's luck. But the thing about ladder, which I think is right, is that you say you play, I don't know, let's say you play somewhere between 500 to 800 games in 2 months. Let's just say that's the amount. Well, there's a mean average, isn't there, that's gonna come out. Yes, you may have got unlucky. You may have been top decked. Yes, you might have, I've just played that one class 5 times in a row. Can you believe it? They're the ones the one class that beats me. But not all the time, right? Overall, it'll average out. And that's why the likes of you and Kalenta, that's why they'll be at the top the whole time, because it's the amount of hours and patience that you put in.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I lost my train of thought there, but as I was saying, the Hearthstone become really good at Hearthstone, it's not just how you play the game, it's also like the deck building is a major part of it, because if you get ahead with someone in like the meta and just like find a new type of deck that just beats everything else, then it just gives you a huge advantage, because you'll be the first one playing it, so that means you'll win like all the games and then people will catch on. So if you're like the first one playing like a new deck that no one knows about, then you definitely get the advantage, since they don't have a clue what you're playing and you're also the only one playing it. That's why like people keep their deck secret until like after tournaments, and then they show their decks. And I think that's just a really big part of Hearthstone, just like deck building, theorizing, and just creating unique decks that are just ahead of everyone else.
It's also a really cool thing about Hearthstone, because you can be, it feels like the community is very inclusive, you know, like yourself and a lot of the other top players are saying, look, these are the decks I'd use, this is the way I'd play that card. But really what's happening is that you're talking about something that's gone. So we've talked about BlizzCon, and in my head, I was thinking you were going to say you were really good with, you know, when your top decks were Shaman, you're thinking that was, but really that's just because that's what I've seen, you know, really behind the scenes, you're thinking, oh no, Hunter and Zoo, but it's gone. Whereas the stuff you're working on now, what you're going to unleash at the next tournament, that will be the talking point after that tournament. But the community still feels inclusive, because it's the news, isn't it? It's the excitement of what you guys have just been up to, and now you've just unleashed it, and then you're not afraid to talk about it, because look, the cat's out of the bag and all the best players will be onto it, and there's no secrets anymore.
Yeah, like another thing to that, you want to be the only one playing that deck, because if another person plays it, then he might actually claim it for themselves, and like so you want to be the one that wins the tournament with the deck, and then you can say, this is my deck, I made the deck, and then like whenever someone plays the deck, they'll refer to it as your deck. So it just gives you like the sense of satisfaction that everyone's just playing your deck.
Yeah, it was a bit like that in the, we used to play be big on a tournament scene called 40k, and it was the same. There was people were trying to get a unique army list, and if you'd always be known as, oh, it's his list, it's his army list, and then everyone else copies it and plays it and stuff. But yeah.
Greenship, I've seen a deck that's come out that seems to be used a lot, that, I think you pronounce his name Show, but it's like S-J-O-W. He's one of the guys that I watch on stream. Like, and he's another guy that he get like you were saying about like gets a deck and then he just plays it to death, and then you know, sometimes he gets like feedback from guys that are on Twitch saying, "Oh, you're boring, you're playing the same deck." But I'm thinking, nah, he's perfecting that deck. That's what he's doing, to the point where he's almost unbeatable with it. But he brought out a deck which is like the Echo Medivh deck, and everyone's playing that. But when I've been on ladder and as I'm sort of, let's call it, creeping down now, I'm coming up against a deck which is similar to the Echo of Medivh deck, but instead of having like, so it's very similar, but it's got like two knife juggler starts, and it's got two sea giants in it. So I was kind of thinking, why the sea giants? Because it's not like, you know, like Imp Implosion with Zoo. You could hit some and you've got a lot of minions out, or maybe you're playing Zoo and you think, right, throw the sea giant out. And for anyone who doesn't know, the sea giant costs 10, but it's one less for every minion on the board. What do you think's the reason for that sea giant, and is it a good idea in the Mage Echo deck?
Well, I guess the sea giant's kinda for like when you actually activate your Echo and then you like get these free Molten Giants and stuff, and then you play down all your Molten Giants and then you add on the Sea Giant as well, I guess that's kind of the thinking. And the Knife Juggler is, I guess, for early game presence. But I haven't personally played the deck a lot, but I'm not sure if that's a good idea, because the Sea Giant, because I don't think the deck runs enough minions for a Sea Giant to be that good. But I guess with a lot of like Zoo and like Hunter around, their boards get pretty big sometimes, and Sea Giant could be played really cheaply.
So perhaps the thinking behind what the guys are doing is not because they're thinking, right, I'll be able to supply the minions, I'll supply a few, but my opponent will give me all the minions and then I'll throw the...
Yeah, I guess that's kind of the thinking, and they're just like probably just testing out a bit, just seeing if they can improve on Show's deck. Because that's what people do, like, people just take someone else's deck and see if they improve it and, like, just make it, like, their own version, like, suit their playstyle.
And, you know, when you talk about, like, the curve, so the I suppose, like, the mana curve, where you want to make sure that you've got an efficient drop when you go from 1 to 2, 2 to 3. I was watching Kit Kat's, I think he was on two days ago, and so he's done the same with the Echo deck, and what he's done is he's just innovated it. So he has got two knife jugglers, which was similar to what I was seeing, but he'd also then added like two leper gnomes and then two clockwork gnomes, two zombie chows and two undertakers. And he kind of explained it. He said, look, what I want is I want to get, you know, early presence. I want to start to smash and be able to trade early with these decks, and I'm on ladder. And But again, I was thinking, and I think I mentioned it to you, Vijay, I was thinking, wow, that's kind of weird, because he's got a leper gnome, which takes health off your opponent, but a zombie chow, which is going to give it to your opponent. So when you're looking at, like, innovations, are there different types of innovations that you might make when you're thinking about a tournament, as opposed to that felt more like a ladder innovation? So is there a different way that you'll approach it when you're kind of, like, change someone else's deck a little bit?
Yeah, definitely, like, as I said before, tournaments are for, like, when you kind of know what decks you'll be playing against and you've, like, figured up the matchups, what you're going to ban and stuff. Ladder, I think that change is okay for ladder, because, like, you increase early game presence to, like, deal with, like, the Zoos and the Hunters, which have a really big early game presence. And then, like, it's like a new deck, like, hardly anyone plays it, I guess. So he's kind of being the first one that plays it, and since he's playing like Echo Medivh, I'm guessing like Sea Giants and stuff. No, not Sea Giants, Molten Giants. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing that people think it's like an aggro mage, but then he'll just pull out like the Molten Giant at the end and just surprise people and like get like a surprise victory that way, because some people just like, if they're playing an aggro deck, they'll play like their BGH down early on because they don't think you'll be running BGH because you're just playing like Leper Gnomes and stuff. So it could catch people off guard. While in a tournament setting, what you'd like to innovate is what would be like the Druids and not just the Hunters and the Zoos, because most likely it won't be Zoo. Most of the time it's Handlock. Some people do play Zoo, and Hunter is not taken that often right now because there's just Warrior everywhere, and you don't really want to put a ban on Warrior unless you're playing Freeze Mage as well. So they'll, like, to innovate in tournaments, I guess it's just like these one card changes, not like a whole like set of cards that improve your like whole matchup. Like, as I said, Firebat does this really well. He just puts in like one card changes or like things like that. He plays the Panda, and in some other decks I'm just trying to think right now. He plays like really interesting cards, like he plays like one offs of like Harrison Jones and like just these decks that are like specifically targeted at one matchup that he knows he'll play against.
And in terms of like the, I suppose the most maybe it's not fun, but I suppose it's the most you're going to get out of a deck and it be competitive. Has Mage been one of the real winners from GVG, especially like in terms of, I suppose, ladder? Because you definitely saw like Freeze Mage at tournaments, it would appear. And I know that Teray took Freeze Mage and everyone was saying, oh, it's the only Freeze Mage at BlizzCon. But now, you know, if you play ladder, yes, there's Freeze Mage, but yes, there's also like Mech Mage. Now there's the Echo of Medivh. You've got a lot more variety, it appears. So is it Mage that have got the sort of the best out of it thus far from what everyone has experimented with and to be on a kind of a competitive standpoint?
I think Mage or Paladin has got the most out of it, because Paladin before was one of like the worst decks because it was just too slow and like other control decks were beating it, and just adding the Muster for Battle and the 2-2 Divine Shield, I forget the names.
Shielded Minibot.
Yeah, Shielded Minibot. It's just improved the early game a lot, so you can deal with like Hunter and like the Zoos. And it also has a really good late game as well, because of Tyrion. So like it's a good all-round like mid-range deck now. Before, you couldn't really play mid-range Paladin because they didn't have the mid-range cards, but they do now. And Mage also like used to just be like a spell-heavy deck because they only had really one good minion, which was Water Elemental, and all the other minions were average or like below par. And now they've added like all these mech cards, and one of the best mechs, well, it's not really a mech, it's the Goblin Blast Mage. It just synergizes really well with the mechs. Yeah, it's just like a 4-mana 5/4 that does 4 damage to random minions. Like, that's just so much value in a card. Like, it just changes games, and it's like the Savannah High main for Mage. It's just this like super amazing card that can just win you the match.
You really feel it when you play against it.
Yeah, it's just crazy. And like, it's like Knife Juggler. It's like when Knife Juggler hits like 3 targets that you don't want it to hit, it's just that feeling every time you like play against Blast Mage. It's just really annoying.
It just really fits in the curve for a Mage, I feel. You know, it's just like it just really fills in that sort of 4-5 range curve. To still be sort of keeping a bit of tempo on the go and, you know, doing something, you know. And I think the Mage deck has changed like so dramatically for the better. You know, it's a lot of fun to play now, that Mech Mage deck.
Yeah, definitely. I played it a few times and it just felt like I was doing so much damage and people just couldn't deal with it. It's just that really satisfying feeling when you're just dominating a game so much.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you've seen, like Frank said, lots of variety with Mage. We've seen Echo Mage, we're seeing Mech Mage, and even seeing what I've been playing recently, and a lot of the pros were streaming, is the Mill Mage. Do you think milling decks are viable now with the new cards, Green Sheet?
There's been milling decks in like every card game, but I think none of them have been amazing. They might have been quite fun, sometimes they might have been viable, but I don't think in Hearthstone there's that many cards that you use to mill to make it, like, amazing. And you have to deal with board and etc., and you have to, like, maintain board control or you just lose due to health. And it's actually quite hard to, like, mill someone out, because I think the only cards are, like, Fel Reaver, which like, mills yourself, and Naturalize, I guess. But I think there's not, like, cards that like mill like half your opponent's deck in like one go and like one turn, so it's like quite a slow deck, and I just don't feel like with just the GBG cards that Mildex will become popular as of yet. But if there's like one or two more cards that have like a milling effect, then maybe. But I don't think it's enough at the moment.
Yeah, cool. Okay, so every week we have a little Dave and I are sort of striving to improve, and we all are really, but Dave and I are really trying to strive to hit legend. I'm in like my fifth season now, and Dave's in his fourth, and we're pushing ourselves on the ladder every week. But Franco, what we're doing is he goes away and we have like Franco's challenge. And he goes away and we set him a little challenge or something to do. We've got a little surprise for him this week. But let's just talk about the week that's just gone, Franco, because we set you last week the challenge of the... was it coming up with the biggest... trying out combo decks, wasn't it? So coming up with different decks that have insane combos. And I tell you what, that spectator mode has been superb for watching you this week, because... I'll get a little message through from Franco and it'll say, "Dude, have you seen this shit? Have you seen this shit?" And I'll go on there and talk about infinite fireballs, Franco.
Yeah, so like that was the biggest one I found. I was going to come on to that last as like a big finale, but fuck it, I'll just shoot my load right away, mate. yeah, that was the biggest one I found when I was looking for combos. Was the infinite fireball. Well, found. I made it. Fuck, found. I made it. It's the infinite fireballs deck. And essentially what it sort of spins around is you want to get four Sorcerer's Apprentices on the table and then play Archmage Antonidas with any spell. And now you're getting Fireball for free and now you have infinite fireballs. And that's a lot of fun, you know.
Did you do that? Did you actually get that many on the table?
Yeah, it happens about... I've been using Hearth Tracker on it. To keep track of my things, so I'll just check them out. So I played 10 games with it, and out of the 10 games I won 6, and out of those 6 I probably pulled off the infinite fireball trick about 4 times. So
did you screenshot it?
No, but I'm going
to... It was amazing to watch. It was amazing to watch. There's one game where your opponent had... Because it's a bit like Freeze Mage for a while, isn't it? Where you're just kind of like delaying the game,
controlling the board. Yep.
And you had one game where your opponent had like 6 minions down. And because you had infinite fireballs, you had lethal... But you just BM'd him and just like fireballed every minion off the board.
Dude, I had a better game. I mean, the game I sort of told you about, and then you think you started watching us after that, BJ, was I played against a warrior and he had full health and 43 armor, and he had about 4 or 5 minions on the board, and I had 4 health, and I took all his minions off the board, took all his armor off, took all his health off. Fireballed my own minions and Archmage Antonidas once just for shits and giggles and killed him.
So go on then, talk us through that combo then, Franco. How do you get to infinite fireballs? What are the steps?
Okay, so what I'm looking for really is I'm looking to duplicate Sorcerer's Apprentice at some point during the course of the game, you know, so I'll have 2 in my hands, and then I either want to combine that with playing those 2 guys and then Echo of Medivh and playing another 2. And then some kind of freeze spell to try and keep those guys safe for a turn. Obviously, there's still plenty of ways to remove them, but a late game, you'd be surprised at how often your opponents run out of ways to remove things that's on the table if he's not getting minions to do it.
And you've got Frost Nova, Blizzard,
yeah,
all that stuff.
Yeah, loads of ways to just keep those guys alive. And if you've got, you can have 3 and 1 in hand, you know, but as long as you need 10 mana, really, you know. And then when you've got 4 guys on the table, you play Archmage Antonidas, and the deck is just jam-packed with spells. So at that point, it's any spell you want, you know.
Spare parts.
Anything. Well, you don't get spare parts because you've got 4 Sorcerer's Apprentices, so everything's minus 40 cost. So most things are coming out for free, So just anything, really, you know. Like you'll play, I'll play coin or secret or anything, you know, anything, it doesn't matter. And then to get that infinite fireballs. But really, what you're looking for initially is you're looking to early in the game stick down that Sorcerer's Apprentice, set him up to be killed and duplicated, in order to have enough to place later on. And throughout the rest of the game, it's pretty much just remove, tie them up, ice block, all that kind of stuff. Until you've got your Archmage in hand, and you can sort of do the combo. But like I say, it works I've got like a 60% win rate, but that's only in casual mode, folks. Don't get too excited. That's not a ladder.
I mean, your 90 seconds must have a problem, right? If you've got a warrior,
yeah.
Like, what is he? Is he on like full out from what, 40, 46 armor?
43, I think he was on. Yeah.
It becomes like button bashing. It's like Street Fighter. Or
you wouldn't. You need two hands, wouldn't you, in order to get?
Yeah,
the...
I did get a bit nervous, mate, because like the clock started ticking down, and I'd already done a few things, and one of them I hadn't quite got to fireballing him. I was in the middle of fireballing my own Archmage Antirhythus, just for shits and giggles.
And then the clock started
ticking down. I'm like, oh shit! Just dragging fireballs to try and kill him before the clock ticked down. Managed to get it, but yeah. It was kind of funny, yeah.
In fact, that reminds me, Greenchief, can you spread the word with all pro players that they are giving me fucking heart attacks watching them on Twitch? Because do you not notice that a lot of pro players, they try and take the 90 seconds, just like you said, but they leave like 3 seconds to do everything. And you're like, no, dude.
Yeah.
And, but they somehow make it every single time as well. I'm like, Jesus, their girlfriends must be so lucky. It's crazy. But I can't take it. I just need it to happen earlier than that.
They do lose a few times. I see Life Coach lose a few times. Kalento's lost a few times as well.
Well, but Life Coach more than Kalento, but Life Coach will talk through his turn, won't you? So he is trying to help you at the same time, which is... I suppose takes a bit longer for him, but so fair enough if he's leaving it to 3 seconds. But everyone else, come on now, let's do it. Let's at least leave like 6 seconds or something.
Well, that was one of the issues I had when I was playing. Like one of the other combo decks I played was like a rogue combo deck, and it's kind of like a replacement for the Miracle Rogue when with Leroy and things. It's still got Auctioneer in there, and it's one that's kicking about. You know, where you use the what's his face, the mana. Mana Adept, is it? He gets bonuses every time he casts a spell.
Mana Adept,
that's it. Yeah, and the idea is, you know, you want to put down like either one or two of those guys with Conceal, and then, you know, Auctioneer, and just cast as many spells as possible, and they get them up to like crazy and levels of attack value. You know, easily get them up to like sort of 17 to 20 attack value, and you can kill most things in a turn from doing that. You know, bearing in mind that a lot of your spells you're casting will remove things like taunts and things, if there's anything kicking about on the boards. But I didn't have as much success with that deck. I mean, it's maybe because I think it takes quite a decent amount of skill to play that deck, and I'm a moron. So there's every chance that other people will do much better with it, you know. And obviously, I will be putting like all the decks that I've tried for this sort of combo challenge up in the show notes, so folks can have a look at them. Ultimately improve upon them and do much better than I've ever would be able to. that was the mage one was the infinite fireballs. The rogue one was the mana adept, and then I did a shaman one, which it's kind of like the mage one. You know, it's geared around just killing everything in a turn. You know, just kicking a ridiculous amount of damage in a turn. But it's geared around using Maligos, and you use Ancestor's Call to get Maligos out, which obviously gives +5 damage onto all your spells, and then you just shoot everything at the face, and you'll easily do 30 damage in a turn with what you've got in hand. You know, the rest of the deck is pretty much just spells, a couple of minions here and there, you know, not much.
So you're using the Ancestral's Call, brings Maligus out.
That's it.
You've still got 6 mana left, so you've got things like Crackle, Lightning Storm,
Lava Burst,
and what's the one mana spell, the Frost one as well, what's that one?
Frost Shock.
Yeah, and that's now doing 6 damage, right?
Yeah, that's it, you know, and you just dick out, you just dick all over someone, like in a turn, pretty much, you know, and quite often as you're playing through the game, you won't be on full health. I mean, what the deck has got, it's got a ridiculous amount of removal, you know, you'll quite often just be winning this sort of minion war, even though you've got really fuck all minions in your deck, but you'll be sort of winning the minion war because you get so many things to remove minions with, that one of the only problems with that deck is by the time you get Maligos out, you've kind of ran out of spells to actually go to face, and you don't have enough minions in your deck to finish someone off. So sometimes you just lose, not because you couldn't get Maligos out and then, you know, get your spells off, but because you can get Maligos out, but you just don't have any spells left, you know. But that's a fun one, you know. I think it's probably more reliable than the Infinite Fireballs mage. But Infinite Fireballs, you know, you can't really beat that.
Infinite Fireballs for the
combo,
win.
Yeah, as a combo, you can't really beat that, can you?
No. Now then, we've decided that whenever we have a guest on, that guest is going to get to determine what the Franco's challenge is for the week. So, Green Sheet, I know we'd already spoken about this before the show, but you get to dictate what Franco goes and spends his half of the time doing next week. So, what have you got for him, buddy? What have you got for him?
So, I'm thinking something like an all-beast deck. Like, all your minions can only be beasts. It doesn't matter what class, but just play random decks, but all the minions just have to be beasts and see where you get from there.
Right. Yeah, all right. That sounds good. I could have had pirates in the first week. That was fun as well. So, yeah, I'll give that a go. That sounds decent. See, I like these challenges because it restricts the way that I get to build decks. And that means I don't have to look at as many cards, which is, you know, boring.
it's quite good as well because it's funny you've come out with that one, Green Sheet, because I've just tried a druid deck, which I think it was on iHalfU actually, and it was a druid deck which was all based themed around beasts, and it had the double combo. So can he still have other cards like can he still have Force of Nature and stuff? But it's mainly beast cards, or are you saying a deck that's entirely comprised?
No, you'd have like spells and stuff, but the minions have to be beasts.
The minions have to be beasts.
Okay, that's
cool. You can have, I guess in Druid there's that beast card, I forgot its name, Druid of the
Fang.
Yeah, that one.
It's really good.
No, that works well with beasts, yeah.
Yeah, okay, that's cool. Yeah, I can do that. Well, what about like, it has to be beasts, or it has to interact with a beast card, at the very least? So,
yeah, I like that.
Yeah, that's cool. So, yeah, that's fine. That's, again, you can filter it, and I can just use those cards, no problem. Yeah.
Cool, so obviously Franco's going away every week, and he's having a go at these challenges, and if you're listening to the show, we'd also like to sort of open up and invite any listeners that also want to, like, take part in this and have a go at the Franco's challenge. Or in this week's case, the Green Sheet Challenge. We've actually just finally started to get sorted on Facebook and Twitter. If you go to @PHBLpodcast, that's Project Hearthstone, Become Legendary. It's capital P, capital H, capital B, capital L. PHBL Podcast. You can go on Twitter and tell us some of the stories. Share some of the... It'd be really cool to... Because as Franco's already said, you know, he's not the greatest player. He's trying his best, bless him, going away and doing these challenges. But it'd be really cool, actually, to hear what you guys come up with. What beast decks do you come out with in this case? So come and share some stories with us on Twitter.
Really cool. I mean, obviously, like I say, I will put the decks that I've been using and you know, these challenges up for people to just go and have a mess around with and experiment with. You know, and if you are doing well with them, you know, and you have improved upon them, don't tell us about that because it'll make me feel really bad.
Well, we're getting to the we've been going an hour and a half, and we're going to turn into pumpkins soon, so we need to start wrapping up. But Green Sheep, just before we do, are there any shout outs you'd like to give, or any messages to teammates and stuff like that?
Shout outs to the whole team Dignitas for being awesome, and shout outs to my teammates Cook My Sock, Blackout, and the newest member Jackie,
who hopefully we'll have on the show one day soon.
But not if you listen to it.
Unless you listen to it. Cool. Well, massive thanks for coming on the show, Green Sheep. It's really cool, like I said, to have you on as our first guest, being a UK-based podcast and you being there. And it's really interesting as well, actually, because I know we want to get into tournament scene and we want to get to legendary and stuff, and it's been really cool to just hear your story and just to tell us what it's like, really, going to BlizzCon and going through the whole process that you went through and stuff. So thanks for sharing that, dude. Really appreciate it. And I hope you'll come on again. We can have you on in the future.
Yeah, sure. It's been great.
Cool, man.
Thanks so much, dude. And maybe like one day we'll actually meet you at a tournament. You know, I'll be at the bottom tables.
Maybe I go to all the UK tournaments, so maybe we'll meet up somewhere there.
Yeah, cool. Well, we'll have to we'll do it on air. Otherwise, everyone will be adding you. But if you we'll have to swap gamer tags and. Franco can kick your ass on a casual with his beast deck.
Yeah, every week I'll be there.
Okay, so that's it for this week, folks. I know Franco will be doing the outro, but go and check us out, as I said, on PHBL Podcast on Twitter. Check out that on Facebook. And if you've got any questions, we are also going to be joined next week by D2. For those who don't know, D2 also made it to World Championships and indeed made it all the way to the semi-final, I believe it was the last four. So it's going to be really cool. He's a really good player. He's got a great stream, which he's just started. He got into streaming a bit later, but he's really building it up, and he really explains his moves and his thought process. He's a really cool guy to like learn from if you're joining this quest to become legendary. So make sure you tune in next week. And thanks as always. Thanks for listening. Thanks for coming on, guys.
Bye, folks. Bye.
Whoa, legendary.
Okay, folks, that's this week's show. We'd appreciate any and all feedback, so please feel free to get in touch via the Facebook page Project Hearthstone or tweet us at PHBL Podcast. In the show notes, I'll stick up the links to our various shit so you can watch BJ on his climb towards legendary rank on Twitch and me floundering with whatever challenge I've been given this week. You can see those links on our Podomatic page or on our website, projecthearthstone.com. If nothing else, it's probably worth checking out the vids that I've made of the Infinite Fireballs deck at work because it's pretty funny shit. So, I'll see you soon.
And now, the end is near, and so I face the final curtain. My friends, I'll say it clear, I'll state my case, of which I'm certain. I've lived a life that's full, I've traveled each and every highway, and more, much more than this, I did it my way. Now get to the chopper!